Daniel Bowman Simon and Casey Gustawaro are on a cross-country mission in a school bus with an organic garden on the roof called Topsy Turvy. Their mission? Convince the 44th President of the United States to establish an organic farm on the White House lawn. Seeing them tack back and forth across the nation's highways on their quixotic mission, you might shake your head or maybe even giggle. Fair enough. But then we ask, what do you want the new president to do for our food chain?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 620th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or perhaps you're among a friend's that are way up there in Elfin Cove who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello, everyone.
Folks, according to Jacques Schmidt, who knows all about such things, there are approximately 23 million acres of lawn in the lower 48 states. 23 million acres. And almost every one of those acres is located close to a hungry market. So, some say, why not establish farms on half of those acres and feed a lot of hungry people? And while we're at it, why not start with the White House lawn? Here to help us explore this notion, we have the men on a mission, Daniel Bowman Simon, with the White House Farm Project. Daniel, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Very good. Hey, you're world famous, you know.
I don't know.
You made it to the front page of the Wall Street Journal today.
Amazing.
Have you read it?
Check that out. I've heard about it, but I've only seen it online.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know it was front page.
Yeah, front page, Wall Street Journal. The title of it, it says Veggie Gardens and Other Ideas for the Obamas. So, give us a little bit about your background, Daniel.
Sure.
You're a marketing guy, right?
A bit, yeah. I'm kind of a policy guy, and Casey and I met in the Peace Corps, and we talked about ways to make this world a better place, and there's certainly a lot of ways to go about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But
and the Peace Corps is one.
Sure, and Casey was working on coastal resource management projects down there, and I was spending a lot of time in the markets figuring out how to get the waste stream reduced and
mm-hmm.
turning a lot of the market waste into compostables and so on. And, got back here to America and figured, well, how can we help America make a better image for the rest of the world? And one of those places where we may be lacking right now is the way that we feed ourselves and the way that the world sees us feeding ourselves. And certainly the president has a nice bully pulpit. And back in February last year, I happened to be in an audience of a speech, Alice Waters.
Before we go there, let's go meet your Confederate, Casey Gustawaro.
Yes.
Casey,
hello,
are you there?
I am here. Hello, Michael. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you for joining us here on the Food Chain. You were in the Peace Corps as well?
Yes. Yeah, we were in the Philippines from 2004 to 2006 and got back to the States. Shortly after that, I started working on the farm near Annapolis, Maryland last year. And, you know, it was something that I'd like to continue doing, maybe have my own farm someday.
Did both of you find, like I found, that the Philippines has to be one of the most beautiful places on the earth?
Certainly. It's 7,000 islands, beautiful coral reefs, wonderful mountains, wonderful people, just a great place, great people.
And did the agrarian nature of their lifestyles have an impact? I think you're both city boys, right?
Yeah. Suburban city, I would say so. But yeah, I mean, that kind of rural lifestyle, it's a lot slower paced than a lot more time to kind of think about things. And yeah, it did affect, I think, both of us and wanting to see how we could change things.
Mm-hmm. And it had an impact on you. Daniel, did you find that to be true?
Sure, yeah. And I mean, the people are absolutely wonderful, and I would say they grow some of the best vegetables in the world, and it certainly changed my relationship with food in the long term. I moved back to New York City and found that the farmers markets of New York City was what was keeping me sane. The Big Apple, for sure.
The one place to find real food, right?
Absolutely.
So,
unless you're growing it yourself. There's a lot of community gardens in New York City.
Yeah, but we found that out over the course of the years, too, talking with a lot of people back there who are doing just that. And so you, both of you, got together here from the relationship you formed in the Philippines and decided to go out into the world and go on a mission. And let's talk a little bit about where the mission started. I guess that would be your job, Daniel.
Sure. As I was saying, in February, I was in the audience at a speech that Alice Waters was giving, accepting.
That would be the world-famous Alice Waters from Chez Panisse in Berkeley?
Correct.
Right.
And she spoke of her dreams, one of which was to have the president once again eating from his own garden. And it kind of caught me off guard, that notion that would be possible. And it just, you know, I went home and started Googling and kind of became obsessed with that thought, enough so that by a couple months later, I quit my job and started working on this full time. The thought that if we seize this moment right now in a period of upcoming transition, then we might just get Alice Waters' dreams coming true.
Well, Casey, Daniel comes to you one day and he says, Casey, I've got a great idea. Quit your job. Let's buy this old school bus and head out into the country. What'd you say?
You know, I was in a bit of a transition myself. I had started to work on this farm, was looking for further farms to work on. And what other chance do you have to go around and see what's going on in the rest of the country and get a nice chance for a road trip, but to work on something that really, I believe, wholeheartedly could potentially make a big impact on the rest of the nation? And yeah, I thought long and hard about it. It took me about a week to finally decide, hey, let's actually do this. But it was really, you know, we went around trying to inspire people with this message that we had, but found that I was inspired by all the great things that are really happening around the country, from all the community gardens, all the restaurants that are trying to source produce more locally, all the urban centers that are trying to grow food more locally. So it was something that I wasn't necessarily sure of what we'd find along the way. And it did take a little while to convince me, but I'm certainly glad that I took that opportunity to embark upon this adventurous journey. So.
And whose idea was topsy-turvy?
That was Daniel's. I think he actually got an email from True Majority, which is an organization started by Ben Cohen of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. And they had used this bus originally during the presidential primaries on a different campaign, highlighting the upside-down nature of our government spending. And they had used it by the time that...
So you better describe topsy-turvy.
Yes, we do have to describe it. It is two school buses. The top one is flipped upside down, so there's four school bus wheels, you know, in the air. It is a bit of an amazing vehicle. The welding job was done by a guy named Tom Kennedy out in...
So you have one school bus that's driving down the road with another school bus that's on top of it with its wheels pointed up in the air.
That is correct. So the top one is upside down. An impeccable welding job done by a guy named Tom Kennedy out in Oakland, California, who makes a lot of these art cars. I'm not sure how many he's made for True Majority, but they have a whole fleet of interesting vehicles that they use. So this was just one of them. And, you know, everywhere we went with this vehicle, I think we traveled about 11,000 miles. And
we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
But when we come back, I want to ask you the all-important question.
Yes.
What is topsy-turvy related to further? Can Kesey's bus further?
No.
Okay. Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Having a little fun today with Daniel Bowman-Simon and Kesey Gustarao. Two gentlemen on a mission to convince the 44th President of the United States to plant an organic farm on the White House lawn. Crazy, you think? Well, maybe not. What would you like to see the President do for our food chain? Curious to hear what you folks have to say. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back with Kesey and Daniel and you. Please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. Today we're talking about the possibility of planting a farm on the White House, an organic farm. And it's a suggestion of Daniel Bowman-Simon and Kesey Gustarao of the White House Farm Project. And before we go back to them and talk about their trip around the country in their bus topsy-turvy, I wanted to take a moment, which I have never done before, and dedicate this program to the passing of a very special man. His name is Charles Chuck Walters. He was an author and also the publisher of Acres USA. Charles Walters was an advocate for ecological local agriculture for the past 50 years. When most of us weren't even born yet, Charles Walters was out there pointing to the nation, national agriculture, and saying, wait, we might just be going in the wrong way. And with respect to our economy, he was also saying the same thing for the past 50 years, and much of what Charles Walters was preaching is now coming true. Much of what he was warning us about was now coming true. And as I spoke a number of times at his Acres USA farm conferences in the heartland of the United States, I came to know Charles very well, and also to know the people who followed Charles, and some of the best Amish farmers in the world were there at Charles' beck and call and at his knee, in a figurative sense, listening to his words. And it was a pleasure to know him, and I'm happy to have him as part of my life. That's Charles Walters, founder of Acres USA, publisher extraordinaire, and the man who invented ecological agriculture. Back to the program with Kesey and Daniel, and we're talking about a bus ride that they took across the United States in their bus topsy-turvy. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about their bus topsy-turvy, and I asked them if it's their bus topsy-turvy was related to Ken Kesey's bus further, which also went on a mission of sorts. Any relation there, Daniel?
I'd say it's a cousin. It's a long-lost
relative. Cousin.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly that notion that a bus can be used for more than just transportation,
mm-hmm.
but as a platform. Our bus happened to have an organic garden on the roof that Kesey tended to.
So you planted an organic garden on top of a school bus and took off across America. Well, Kesey, what'd you plant?
Well, we had some herbs growing up there. And
they must have been hardy son of a guns, huh?
They were hardy. I tried a number of different things, and some of them certainly didn't make it. It started off the journey in the later summer with tried some squash and cucumbers up there. They didn't seem to make it. But some root crops and some greens and herbs, you know, got a few things growing up there, and built a little windscreen so it wasn't mm-hmm. too affected by the wind going 60 miles an hour down the highway. It was a bit of an experiment, and it wasn't the most productive garden by any means, but at least gave us a little supplement to our diet along the way. So, mm-hmm. you know, we thought if we could go travel around the country in different climate zones and all the wind coming down the highway, certainly if we can do that, certainly the president can put something on his nice little fertile patch of 18 acres on the grounds of the White House.
Well, and with respect to that, it's not such a silly notion, because it has certainly happened in the past that the residents of the White House have used the White House grounds to grow food, and maybe we should look back at that. Daniel, who started this?
Well, John Adams was the first occupant of the White House, and he was certainly growing his own food there. You know, mm-hmm. back in those days, the president was kind of in charge of feeding himself too. You wouldn't think you'd see a president these days in a supermarket. Somebody else takes care of it. But at that time, the president was, you know, footing the bill, and so it certainly made sense to go with that economic route. And like Casey said, there's certainly plenty of space there. So,
and of course, John Adams was a farmer from the get-go as well. That's what he was, up in the Boston area. And so moving to the White House in Washington, D.C., which was a brand-new building at the time, what else do you do? And, of course, following John Adams was Thomas Jefferson. He as well was a farmer, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, he is somebody who's always talked about the cultivators of the earth as the most valuable citizens, the most vigorous, independent, most virtuous, and they're tied to their country and wedded to its liberty and interests by the most lasting bonds. That's from a letter he wrote mm-hmm. to John Jay in 1785. So there's always been this notion in our country that what makes us great is our connection to the land.
Yeah, you know, I've often thought that probably one of the greatest tragedies of industrializing our agriculture is that we've taken people out of agriculture. Now, of course, professional agriculturalists, professional growers will say, well, that's the best thing in the world that ever happened. And having been raised on a farm, you know, and myself, that was a lot of work. But that work makes good people, doesn't it? Working on the land. It makes much better people or much more socially stable people than people who are raised hanging around a street corner.
It makes for humble people, too.
Very much.
I think. And people who are very satisfied with their lot in life. And, you know, now that I've become more connected via the Philippines and via the farmers markets and via this trip, and at this point I think it seems profoundly un-American or even unhuman to not know where a potato, a tomato, a carrot comes from, much less how to grow the food. And so that's sort of the foundation of our interest in mm-hmm. setting forth a positive vision for the future that we all share together. It can start right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue on Tuesday.
Well, one of the most famous residents of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue was not a president, but rather a first lady, Eleanor Roosevelt. And she went up against the advice or the direction of her husband's Department of Agriculture and started a victory garden in the early days of World War II. And her victory garden inspired millions of victory gardens. Want to fill us in a little bit on Eleanor Roosevelt's efforts?
She started thinking about it in 42. It didn't happen that year. It seems that the USDA and the Victory Garden program was a lot more focused on the rural parts of America, mm-hmm. and they thought that it would be a waste of seeds. So I've heard to be planting and inspiring urban agriculture projects, but it was something that she wanted to do, and she got letters from people all over America asking her to do that. And, you know, by 1943, she made it happen. It was a small patch, as so far as I know. It was tomatoes, beans, carrots, and cabbage. That was about it. It certainly was not a large piece of the White House property, but nonetheless, it was unified with the rest of America in asking for those sacrifices. And even through 1945, I found a quote in 1945 asking people in cities, towns, and villages to assist our farmers in every possible way to reach the food goals which have been set for this year, to ask Americans to share our available food by observing the rules of rationing and by cooperating and counting on Americans to each and every one of us to keep playing an important role to make sure that our food is not in peril. In America.
And, of course, in World War II, those were very trying times, that if you wanted to eat a lot of good food, you really had to grow your own good food or trade with your neighbors who were doing the same. And that's how we got by in very, very tough times. Folks, this is a Food Chain, Michael Olson. Today we're talking about what the new president should do with his White House lawn. What do you think the new president should do? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Love to hear from you. We've got Daniel Bowman-Simon and Casey Gustawaro from the White House Farm Project. They've run around the United States collecting signatures. When we get back, we're going to hear about that trip. Do stay tuned. Well, according to NASA, there are approximately 23 million acres of lawn in the lower 48 states here in the United States. And almost every one of those acres is located close to a hungry market. So some say, why not establish farms on half of those acres and feed a whole lot of hungry people? Two of the people who seem to be suggesting that, and furthermore, they say, why not start with the White House? What a perfect example. What a bully pulpit. And so, why not? Well, that's what we're asking Casey Gustawaro and Daniel Bowman-Simon of the White House Farm Project. Casey, you've worked on an organic farm. Is it possible to grow food on the White House lawn?
I would think so. I worked at a farm pretty close to here, actually, only about 30 miles outside of Washington, D.C. The grounds of the White House, I mean, the entire footprint of that area is about 18 acres, quite a large space. They're growing trees and flowers. They even do have a few herbs growing there. And we've recently heard that there's even a few vegetables during the summer that they put in container gardens on the roof. So certainly the climate is fine.
But what about all the hot air and BS?
Yes. Well, you know, good fertilizer there the last 8 years. that can certainly help. But I think there's certainly enough space. They have a large staff of gardeners that already do things there. There is the infrastructure to do it. It's just a matter of the next resident coming in and saying that's really what they want to do. And if there's enough support from the U.S. citizens, I think that is something that can certainly happen fairly easily and something that could be cost-effective. I mean, they spend quite a lot of money on food, feeding the White House and all those big state dinners. Why not show a good example of saving some money in these current economic times right there at home?
Well, good. In that regard, Mary has a question for both of you. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael and guests. I have actually a couple of questions. The first is, if America made the decision to move forward with a Victory Garden program, how would that affect American agriculture? And then my second question would be, how would that affect all of the imports also coming into the country from China and Mexico and so on? And you mentioned the number of acres that are available in lawns. How many acres are actually in production for agriculture now in the United States.
In lawns?
And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Well, with respect to lawns, it's something that perhaps I can answer. I think the lawn question is just that there are 43 million acres of green grass growing. Oops, that wasn't it, huh, Carol? Well, let's start with the second part of that question. If we all were to grow victory gardens, how would that affect the amount of food that we're starting to import from foreign countries like China and Mexico? Daniel?
Well, I have to say that our dependence on those foreign imports would certainly be curtailed, and I think that would only be a good thing. You know, our focus is really on one particular victory garden, or hope garden, mm-hmm. as some people have suggested. The Obamas brand this at the White House. But certainly, if people are growing more of their own food, then they're taking care of some, if not all, of their daily.
But isn't that the message that you want to project with respect to having the Obamas establish a garden or a farm on their own, on the White House lawn? Don't you want to have an impact on everybody else like Eleanor Roosevelt had when she established the Victory Garden in World War II? Don't you want to tell people to start isn't that what you're saying? Start your own garden, grow your own food, take care of yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of it, and there's also, hopefully, a newfound respect for farmers. You know, we're certainly not getting out there advocating for legislation requiring every single person in America to grow their own food, but there are people whose jobs and whose passions and whose family history is to this day connected with providing good food for the people of America, and they've sort of been lost in all this, mm-hmm. and they're not quite so recognized. And so this is actually a very unique opportunity for Obama to connect the interests of self-sufficiency with the interests of preserving the very fabric of rural America and bringing more attention to the people who toil and work the land. Okay. And so, you know, there's basically two things I think that could be very well promoted. One is just getting people outside working the land, growing their own food, and the other is to think more about where their food is coming from and identify farmers market sources or ASAs.
Well, Casey, let me ask you this. You're working on a working farm, as it were. You're growing food and selling it to the marketplace. If everybody or 50% of the people were out there growing their own food, how would that impact the ability of the farm to stay in business?
Well, I think at this point, that would certainly impact some. There's not enough local farms where is most of the food that people are getting from large suppliers and supermarkets. There isn't enough supply coming from these small family-run farms, mm-hmm. To meet that demand that people have. So I don't think it would make such a large impact. And we aren't necessarily asking everyone to grow their own food. It would be great. That would be a great message. But,
Having been raised on thinking about this question, having been raised on a farm and having been a teenage herbicide, as it were, and having run away from being a farmer for all my life and trying not to be one, I've decided the way I can affect this transition from buying food from far on the other side of the earth to buying local food is to take my money and buy food from local farmers. And I can really make a big change in that way as well. Probably even do a better job of making that change than planting a garden in my front yard, which I do anyway. But let's go back to your wonderful trip, because I'm a great fan of adventures, and it sounds to me like you guys had a wonderful adventure. Where did you start your trip in Topsy Turvy? The bus with a garden on the roof.
We started this. The bus. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Sorry. Daniel. We'll start with you.
We still haven't mastered the art of not cutting each other off after all these months. But, you know, we did start in Vermont and traveled through. First stop was Middlebury College and saw some of their amazing agriculture projects there. The students are actually feeding the rest of the students at the dining halls through a working farm there on campus. And spent a good deal of time prepping, ripping off the roof in New York City and starting that vegetable garden at the Green Market in Union Square.
Oh, right. Started at the Green Market in New York City, kind of, and headed west from there?
Headed west. We did visit Milwaukee and Growing Power.
Wait a minute. I want to hear about that. We got to take a quick break. We're going to talk about Will Allen's Growing Power and the boys on the bus when we get back. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. What do you want the president to do for our food chain? Right back. Well, you know, there are about 23 million acres of lawn in the lower United States. I guess they're kind of like in a bank. You know, we put green grass on them and admire them, and they really don't, other than being green grass, they really don't do much of anything. On the other hand, we have a lot of acreage and farmland out there. It peaked in 1950 at about a billion acres in agriculture, and it's been going down ever since then as we import more and more and more and more of our food because the costs of doing business here in the United States keep going up and up and up, and it gets cheaper to do it someplace else. So consequently, we here in the United States find ourselves in the position of eating more food that comes from someplace else. Maybe Mexico, maybe China, maybe anywhere. But that's what's happening to us. We're becoming less and less dependent on our own food sources. And so some say, why not plant on those lawns? Why not start with the White House? And among those saying it are Daniel Bowman-Simon and Casey Gustawaro, who got themselves an old school bus with an organic farm growing on the roof, an organic garden, and they took off across America to introduce people to the idea and visit places where things like this are already happening. And they started up in Vermont, went to New York City in the Green Market and tinkered on their bus, and then headed west into the sunset. And first stop, Milwaukee, where there is a gentle giant named Will Allen who has an operation called Growing Power. Tell us a little bit about it, Casey.
Well, Growing Power is an absolutely amazing place. It's about 2 or 3 acres of land in the urban center of Milwaukee, providing food to, in one of those food deserts, as Will Allen likes to call it, where people don't have access to these whole foods. And he's got these great greenhouses that grow throughout the winter. A great, you know, obviously produces a lot of his own soil there. That's the cornerstone of any good farm, is the soil, and does that with vermicompost or worm castings. He was even nice enough to, he and his staff showed us around for about 3 hours, took a lot of time out of his day, and provided us with some nice fresh soil from those worm castings for the top of our bus. And this was right before he won the MacArthur Genius Award, which is a grant that will hopefully help his organization continue to do more good work in the Milwaukee and Chicago area. They actually have a great kind of ornamental food garden that was just put up in Chicago, which would be a great kind of model to look at for something on the White House as well. It's right near the center of Chicago, where lots of tourists can see.
You know, Milwaukee is it. I had an opportunity to speak at an urban ag conference last year, this time in Milwaukee, and it's an interesting city because they're really coming to grips with the fact that they've lost their industry and there's not much for people to do. And there's a lot of unused land within the city itself. And even the city government there is making great strides at encouraging metropolitan agriculture through zoning and all kinds of you know, things that governments can do to help agriculture, metropolitan agriculture. And it seems to be Milwaukee is one place that needs it the most, and it's really starting to take hold there. Where did you folks go from Milwaukee?
We continued to head out. Our big stop along the way, or our destination, was actually on the West Coast to head to Slow Food Nation, which was happening on Labor Day weekend in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And that was just a great, great experience to go there. 60,000 people converging on San Francisco, all talking about our changing our food system. They had, you know, the Victory Garden planted out there in front of City Hall in San Francisco, a great way that politicians are leading the way in other places. And hopefully that model can be replicated there at the White House.
Let me ask you this. In going through the heartland of the country, did people look at you kind of like you're nuts or something?
You know, we were met with a lot of generosity and a lot of, some people certainly... Everyone has questions about this crazy-looking bus.
I'll wager that there were some, like, Montana cowboys who must have thought you were from California or something.
Perhaps. You know, we actually headed fairly quickly through the country. But the bus, it was something that it was an opening to a conversation. Mm-hmm. And people around the country, I think, do kind of get this idea of having food closer to home and supporting local farmers and local economies. It's something that isn't that far-fetched of an idea, and it's something that wasn't, I mean, that was happening not too long ago. So
did you meet Alice Waters?
We did actually get a chance to meet Alice Waters, and she
did she feed
us.
You?
What's that?
Did she feed you?
She did feed us, yes. So
that's heaven, right? You made it across the country, made it to California, met Alice Waters, and she fed you. What could be
that
better than
correct.
That?
What is better than that? Not too much, though. It was quite... I think that was the one person that Daniel was kind of a little nervous to actually to talk to, since this is kind of her idea, her dream. And we weren't exactly sure how she would take to our bus, but she was incredibly gracious, but, you know, took us to her restaurant and spent a good amount of time with us, went on our bus, and...
She politely declined our offer to take her on the road with us. She's more comfortable sticking around. Berkeley.
I would bet so.
Well, busy already.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to take you to the here and now. We've got a new president coming into office and a new family, and hope for a change is in the air. So let's talk about exactly what we'd like to see happen on the White House lawn. And gosh, I don't think you guys are the only people that are advocating this. We will be right back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, there's a new administration coming to town in Washington, D.C. What do you want that administration to do to develop a more secure food chain for you and your family? Well, Casey Gustawaro and Daniel Bowman-Simon have an idea. They would like that new president to use the bully pulpit of the White House and the White House lawn to plant an organic garden or farm and show the nation that the best thing to do is to take care of ourselves with food, and the best way to do that is plant a garden. So they got in an old school bus and traveled around the world, around the country at least, and talked with some very famous people and some very ordinary people, and made it all the way back to Washington, D.C. And what happened when you got to Washington, D.C., Daniel? Oops, I guess I better press the button, dummy me. What happened when you got to Washington, Daniel?
Yeah, we our first stop was the DuPont Circle Farmers Market, and as soon as we got into this town, we really connected with a lot of people here who want to make this work, who know that the Obamas are talking about being more tied to their community and to service projects. And so we've gotten letters of support now from the D.C. Central Kitchen, which is a hunger organization that teaches people how to cook, job skills.
How many people sign your petitions?
We've got about 12,000 right now, and maybe that Wall Street Journal piece will get some more tacked on. And we're working with kids now, too. We visited a few D.C. public schools, and those kids just can't wait for Obama to start growing food at the White House. And we're hopefully going to going to get a lot more kids from this point on to just keep sending letters to the White House until this happens. And for all we know, it could happen on Tuesday. It could happen on Wednesday. But, you know, we'll...
So do you think President Obama is going to go out into the White House lawn with a shovel and start digging? Do you see that?
Could be. I'll tell you, the ground's probably frozen right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, they can make incredible things happen there at the White House. And so we're keeping our fingers crossed, but we're pretty sure it'll happen.
If he were to do this, what would you like? If the new president were to establish an organic garden or farm on the White House lawn, what would you like to see come of it?
Brussels sprouts.
Right. And you expect to sell somebody on starting a garden with Brussels sprouts?
You know, people who have not tried Brussels sprouts or have only had the frozen ones, you know, there's something left to be desired.
You know, you're absolutely right. Last Saturday after the radio show, I went to the farmer's market and I went around and bought all kinds of vegetables, among them Brussels sprouts. And I came home and I put them all in a big pot and I made a farmer's market vegetable soup. And the Brussels sprouts were among the most tastiest things in that soup. It was just absolutely wonderful. And guys.
Farmer John's got some great Brussels sprout recipes, one with maple syrup and leeks and cranberries. So.
And hey, you guys are wonderful for embarking on this great adventure. And I'm jealous because anybody that goes on an adventure without me, I feel left out. But you guys did a great adventure. And you know, whether the new administration plants an organic garden on the White House lawn or not, is one thing, but your efforts to point out how we need to get back in touch with our food, you know, are well served no matter what happens. So Casey Gustawaro and Daniel Bowman Simon, thank you both for embarking on that adventure and joining us on the Food Chain. And see you all next week for more What's Eating What Radio. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.